All right, remember, the machine knows if you're lying. First statement, Carvana will give you a real offer on your car all online.
False.
True, actually. Oh. You can sell your car in minutes.
False? That's gotta be...
True again. Carvana will pick up your car from your door, or you can drop it off at one of their car vending machines.
Sounds too good to be true, so true!
Finally caught on. Nice job. Honesty isn't just their policy, it's their entire model. Sell your car today, too.
Carvana.
Pickup fees may apply.
You're listening ad-free on Wondery Plus. It's February 25th, 1994, at the Hamar Olympic Amphitheater near Lillehammer, Norway. 24-year-old figure skater Nancy Kerrigan grins as she leaps and pirouettes on the ice. She's pleased with herself. She hasn't made a single error so far in her four-minute routine. That's the most important skate of Nancy's life. This is her second and final routine in the 1994 Winter Olympics, and Nancy is one of the favorites to win a medal. Nancy moves into the final element of her routine. She spins as she bends down on one leg before rising up, tucking her arms close to her body and rotating so quickly that she transforms into a human blur. Then Nancy stops and lifts her arms into the air triumphantly. She holds her final pose for a moment and then breaks into an even broader smile. Nancy knows that her performance was good enough to win an Olympic medal. The reaction of the crowd shows that they are delighted for her too. So Nancy curtsies to each side of the arena before skating off the ice and into the arms of her coach. She hears him whisper into her ear, "You are so gutsy." But when Nancy sits down to await her scores, she feels a familiar dull ache return to her right knee, a reminder of the brutal assault that almost kept her out of the Olympics. No event in the 1994 Winter Olympics catches the world's attention more than the ladies' figure skating program. Nancy Kerrigan's silver medal is not just a sporting success, but a remarkable comeback for an athlete whose dream of Olympic glory was almost taken away by vicious and violent rivalry. Just 7 weeks earlier, Nancy was injured in an attack designed to benefit her fellow American skater Tonya Harding, shocking the sporting world on January 6, 1994. From Noiser and Airship, I'm Lindsey Graham, and this is History Daily. History is made every day. On this podcast, every day, we tell the true stories of the people and events that shaped our world. Today is January 6, 1994, the attack on Nancy Kerrigan. It's February 16, 1991, at the Target Center in Minneapolis, Minnesota, 3 years before Nancy Kerrigan will win her silver medal in the Winter Olympics. 20-year-old Tonya Harding takes her place on the ice and waits for the music that will accompany her free skate routine. She controls her breathing and tries to keep calm. Tonya is currently in second place in the U.S. Figure Skating Championship. She's about to unleash a new trick that she hopes will send her to the top of the leaderboard. For most of Tonya's career so far, she's been an underdog. Many of America's top figure skaters come from affluent middle-class families and trained at the best rinks. But Tonya's family was different. Her father was often unemployed, and her mother struggled to earn enough as a waitress to support the family. Life at home had been hard for Tonya. She was sexually assaulted by her half-brother, and her mother was abusive, even throwing a knife at her on one occasion. At the age of 19, Tonya married Jeff Galluli, but he has been controlling and physically abusive too. Tonya's one escape from her domestic misery has always been the skating rink. As a child, she had a natural talent and soon learned to complete difficult jumps and moves. She was picked up by a coach and soon after began to win professional competitions. A few months ago, Tonya's coach had her practicing a triple axel, 3 spins in the air after a forward-facing takeoff. It's the most difficult jump any skater dares attempt, and no American female skater has ever landed one in competition before. Tanya hopes she can be the first, and if she lands the jump today, she will certainly become national champion. When the music begins, Tanya eases into her routine with some spins. Then she begins to circle the rink, picking up speed for her first jump, a triple Lutz. Soaring through the air, she lands perfectly, but the triple Lutz is simple compared to the next trick, the triple axel. Tanya skates a length of the ice to compose herself. Then she picks up the pace. At speed, she plants her foot and leaps as high as she can, spinning around three times. Tanya finishes the last rotation just before landing back on the ice and turning out of the move. Even though Tanya is less than a minute into her routine, she cannot help roaring with delight and pumping her fists. The crowd does the same. They know they have just witnessed a milestone in American skating history. The rest of Tanya's routine passes without error, and when she skates off the ice, she's already punching the air. She knows she has just skated the best routine of her life. Tanya turns to her left, and a television interviewer thrusts a microphone in her face, wanting to know when Tanya made the final decision to attempt the triple axel. Tanya is only too happy to tell her.
I made it yesterday, and I knew that I had nothing to lose. I could go out and do everything. And I'm so happy with myself. And I just want to thank God and my club, Carousel Figure Skating Club, for all their support, and especially my husband.
Tanya feels a thrill when the interviewer confirms that her scores have been tabulated. Tanya's impressive free skate routine has sent her into first place, and for the first time in her career, Tanya is the American figure skating champion. She has earned a place on the U.S. team for the next month's World Championship. Tanya's successful completion of the triple axel will confirm that she is one of the best figure skaters in America. But she will not be the only woman who has the talent to succeed. Christy Yamaguchi came a close second at the U.S. Championships, and she will beat Tanya at the following month's World Championship. And in third place at both the U.S. and World Championships will be Nancy Kerrigan, a consistent and hardworking skater whose reserve style many prefer to Tanya's flair. And over the next 3 years, it will be Nancy who will become Tanya's biggest rival in the run-up to the next Winter Olympics. And as stakes rise, this rivalry between the two will become so heated that Tanya and her husband will turn to criminal action in an attempt to keep Tanya on top.
Lowe's knows that saving is always top of mind, especially this season. That's why we've picked some great deals for early Black Friday. Get free select DeWalt, Cobalt, or Craftsman tools when you buy a select battery or combo kit. More tools? Why not? Plus, we've got select pre-lit artificial Christmas trees starting at $59.98, because it's never too early to think Christmas. Get Black Friday prices without the crowds. Lowe's, we help. You save. While supplies last, selection varies by location.
It's the middle of December 1993, 1 month before the attack on Nancy Kerrigan. 26-year-old Jeff Galluli picks up the telephone ringing inside his rented house in Portland, Oregon. On the other end of the phone, he hears the tearful voice of his ex-wife, Tanya Harding, speaking to him from Chiba, Japan. Jeff listens as Tanya miserably explains how she fell on her combination jump at her latest competition. The mistake dropped her down to fourth place, and to Tanya, this is unacceptable. The U.S. championships are coming up, and she can't place fourth there. Only the top two skaters in that competition will represent the USA the next Winter Olympics. Tanya is determined to be one of them. After winning the U.S. championships in 1991 with her first triple axel, Tanya's skating slipped. She won only one competition over the next 3 years. She did not medal in the 1992 Winter Olympics. She even lost the ability to land the triple axel, a move now indelibly associated with her. Tanya's domestic life took a turn for the worse, too. She and her husband Jeff briefly separated in the summer of 1991. They reconciled, but police were called to domestic disturbances at their house on a number of occasions. 4 months ago, a judge granted them a divorce, but they hadn't actually split up. They still live together when Tanya is not away competing, and Jeff continues to act as Tanya's manager. So for weeks, Jeff has wondered how to ensure Tanya does well at the U.S. Championships and is selected for the Winter Olympics. Because if she makes the Olympic team, lucrative sponsorships and endorsements will follow. So trying to console his crying ex-wife, Jeff tells Tanya that he'll think of a solution and then ends their call. Immediately after, he dials the number of his old school friend, Sean Eckert, who has recently started a bodyguard business, although he doesn't actually have any clients yet. Over the phone, Jeff explains to Sean that Tanya is worried she won't place high enough at the U.S. Championships to make the Olympic team. Jeff waits for a response. Sean is silent on the other end of the phone. So with a sigh, Jeff spells out his request. He asks Sean if he knows anybody who might be able to disable Tanya's biggest rival, reigning national champion Nancy Kerrigan. Jeff wonders if there's anyone who can make it so that Nancy wouldn't be able to skate at the U.S. Championships. Again, there's silence on the other end of the phone. But then Sean says he might know some guys for the job. 2 weeks later, Jeff parks his Ford pickup and walks up to a small house. He rings the doorbell, but is surprised when the door is answered by Sean Eckhart's mother. Then it dawns on Jeff. This isn't the office of a busy bodyguarding firm, but Sean's parents' house, where Sean is trying to build a business out of a converted bedroom inside. Nevertheless, Jeff enters and greets Sean warmly. He also shakes hands with two men he doesn't know. They introduce themselves as Shane Stant and Derek Smith, and they say they can solve any problems Jeff might need fixing. Jeff takes a deep breath and explains that he wants them to stop Nancy Kerrigan from competing at the U.S. Championships. Derek asks how much Jeff is willing to pay, and Jeff says he has $6,000. And if Tanya makes it to the Olympics and earns enough from endorsements, they'll be able to pay the men $1,000 a week to be her bodyguards. Derek nods and says the fee is satisfactory. Then the conspirators begin brainstorming ideas to take Nancy out. Sean floats the idea of cutting her Achilles tendon, but Shane thinks the blood splatter would be too easy to trace. Sean offers a new idea, running Nancy off the road when she's driving. But Jeff quickly interrupts, saying he doesn't want to go that far. They don't need to kill Nancy. They just need to injure her, maybe her right leg, the one she lands on when she jumps from the ice. Eventually, the men agree to a plan. Derek and Shane will break Nancy's right leg. Soon after, Jeff explains the plan to an impatient and nervous Tanya. He says he needs to return to the house later with cash and photos of Nancy so the attackers can pick out their target. But as Jeff continues to explain the plan, he begins to feel a little uneasy. This is serious business and wants Tanya to make the final call. He's surprised by her levity when Tanya giggles and replies, "Let's do it." Jeff and Tanya's decision will become one of sport's most infamous incidents of rivalry. The fallout will cast Nancy Kerrigan as an innocent victim in a quest for a fairy tale comeback, while forever tainting Tanya Harding's reputation as a vindictive schemer. It's 2:30 p.m. on January 6, 1994, at Cobo Arena in Detroit, Michigan, one day before the ladies' competition at the U.S. Championships. 22-year-old Shane Stant loiters at the side of the rink, watching Nancy Kerrigan practice her routine. He glances around. The seats are empty, but there are plenty of other competitors and officials in the arena. He glumly stares at the television camera filming Nancy's preparations. He's annoyed that so many potential witnesses are here, and he's running out of time to break Nancy's leg before the U.S. Championships start. Already, Shane has faced plenty of problems in the lead-up to today. He originally planned to attack Nancy at the rink where she trained in Massachusetts, but Shane couldn't rent a car at the airport because he didn't have his credit card. When he eventually made it to the ice rink, he was told Nancy had already left for the U.S. Championships in Detroit. So Shane boarded a Greyhound bus and traveled west. Now he is as close as he ever has been to Nancy, but he's still waiting for an opportunity to carry out the attack. A sudden swish of skates catches Shane's attention. He sees Nancy step off the ice and fit guards onto the blades of her skates. He watches her walk through a curtain and down a corridor underneath the auditorium seats. Then Shane notices the cameraman lift his equipment off his shoulder and turn it off. Shane realizes this is his chance. He pushes past the cameraman and through the curtain. As soon as he's in the corridor, Shane takes his collapsible steel baton from his pocket and extends it to its full length. Nancy has stopped to speak to a woman. Shane walks up to them, swings his arm, and smashes the baton into Nancy's right leg just above the knee. Nancy collapses to the floor, screaming, and Shane doesn't wait around. He runs down the hall and pushes against a plexiglass door leading outside, but it's locked. Shane panics as he hears people rush to Nancy's aid. Fearing he'll be caught, Shane begins smashing the glass with the baton, breaks through, and runs to a parked car, jumping into the passenger seat. In the driver's seat, his fellow conspirator Derek Smith has been waiting and speeds away from the Cobra Arena even before Shane has a chance to tell him that he's pulled off the attack. But Shane actually hasn't done the job. Nancy's leg is not broken. The assault leaves her with a bruised knee and tendon, and she is forced to withdraw from the U.S. Championships, leaving Tanya to come first. But given the extenuating circumstance, the U.S. Olympic Committee agrees to grant Nancy space on the Olympic team. 7 weeks later, she will ride a wave of sympathy and popular support to the silver medal, while Tanya Harding is booed as she finishes in eighth place at the Winter Olympics. And soon after, the conspiracy unravels. Law enforcement begins to put the pieces together, and for their roles in the attack, Jeff Gillooly and his conspirators will all face jail time. Tanya Harding will avoid prison, but face 3 years probation, a fine, and community service. Later, she will also be stripped of her national title and banned for life from the U.S. Figure Skating Association. Not at all the result that Tanya was hoping for following the infamous attack on Nancy Kerrigan on January 6, 1994. Next on History Daily, January 7, 1558, a surprise attack on the port of Calais ejects the English from their last stronghold in mainland France. From Noiser and Airship, this is History Daily, hosted, edited, and executive produced by me, Lindsey Graham. Audio editing and sound design by Molly Bach. Music by Lindsey Graham. This episode is written and researched by Scott Reeves, produced by Alexandra Curry-Buckner. Executive producers are Stephen Walters for Airship and Pascal Hughes from Noiser.